Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelda providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelda can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Day 23, the trial of Karen Reed, and what a day it was. Did we all see the same thing? I'm kind of wondering, when you look online at comments about this day, can't say I'm that surprised, but it is a little stunning just how dramatic two different worlds seem to be on this case. It's hard to imagine a more theatrical mic drop in a courtroom than this. After 23 days, 38 witnesses, and hours upon hours of technical data, forensic breakdowns, and legal fencing, the prosecution in the Karen Reed trial ended their case not with an expert or a detective or even some flashy visual aid. They ended it with Karen Reed's own words. Not words paraphrased by someone else, not some dramatized quote, her literal voice, her face, her admission on video. And we're going to watch that video in just 1 second. Before we do, I got to ask, please hit subscribe wherever you're watching this, wherever you may have downloaded this or done with podcasts. My mind's going different places because my mind's over here grabbing this video while I'm trying to talk. It's a lot of multitasking, and sometimes my brain just locks up. All right. Anyway, be sure to press subscribe wherever you are listening to this in the world of podcasts, Apple, Spotify, wherever it is. Please hit subscribe there. And hey, check out our YouTube channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. That's where you're going to find all of our content on video so you can watch it and see even more than what we have on the podcast channel and vice versa. And in the comments, please, please, please tell me what you're thinking about this case, because it is, yeah, it's continuing to get crazier. Here's the clip that the prosecution closed with today. Let's take a look at that.
So I thought, could I run him over? Did he try to get me as I was leaving and I didn't know it? I mean, I've always got the music blasting. It's snowing. I got the wipers going, the heater blasting. Did he come and hit the back of my car and I hit him in the knee and he's drunk and passed out and asphyxiated or something? And then when I hired David Yannetti, I asked him those questions the night of January 29th. Like, David, what if, I don't know, what if I ran his foot over? Or what if I clipped him in the knee and he passed out and or went to care for himself and he threw up or passed out? And David said, yeah, then you have some element of culpability.
And here's the words.
Is it 207?
Your Honor, the Commonwealth rests.
Boom. That'll be interesting to see who plays him in the movies and the Lifetime specials and the Netflix drama series, and eventually a feature film on HBO. I wonder who would play who. We should put that out on X or Twitter on social and just see have everybody fill in the blank and see who would play who. Or hell, I mean, this video is out there, so post it under here. Who would play who in the comments? I'd be really I'd be curious about that. Oh, that'd be interesting. That to me almost plays like a commercial for a law firm. I was worried, and then I called David Yannetti. David Yannetti Law Firm. Or I don't even think Yannetti and Yannetti. I don't know what it is. But that's where like the voiceover would hit in, and then it would go back to Karen, and then somehow it ends up not with the solution of, well, you're not, you know, you, there's nothing to worry about. It's like, well, yeah, then you'd be comfortable. If you want to lose. But then the dock where that that piece plays, there is it kind of flashes then over to Alan Jackson. And then Alan Jackson is kind of the hero saying, no, we got a case. I'm going to play with that. I think I might be able to make a fun little fake commercial. That might be a weekend project. All right, let's continue on with what has been going on. So picture this. The jury is sitting quietly focused, already worn down from weeks of testimony. And they're shown a brief 50-second clip. It's not a reenactment or a simulation. It's Karen Reed herself, filmed back in 2024, talking through her own lingering doubts. She just heard. She says, what if I clipped him in the knee? You could practically feel the weight of those words hanging in the air. It wasn't the prosecution making a claim. It wasn't an expert forming a conclusion. It was the defendant pondering her own potential culpability out loud, voluntary, and with cameras rolling, Karen's favorite thing. And it wasn't just that she asked the question. She went further. She recalled asking her attorney back on the day John O'Keefe's body was discovered, whether she might have accidentally hit him. According to her, her lawyer responded, yeah, thinking it'd have some element of culpability. Not exactly the script of someone denying everything without hesitation. It's kind of the moment that, whether it's technically a confession or not, lands heavy in a case built on data, patterns, and timelines. This was a moment of raw, personal narrative that no reconstruction model could compete with. When that video ended, the courtroom didn't erupt. No shouting, no gasps, just silence. The kind of silence that only happens when something hits dead center. Jurors reportedly stared at the blank screen long after it went dark. It's not just attention, that's impact. That's a jury absorbing something they can't unhear. And that was exactly the point. The prosecution, led by Special Prosecutor Hank Brennan, could have rested their case on the back of Dr. Judson Welcher, the crash reconstruction expert who'd spent 3 days being grilled and held his ground. But they didn't. They took it a step further. They chose to close with Karen Reed's own narrative. The one moment they knew couldn't be cross-examined, spun, or interpreted. And the video played, and the moment sunk in. Brennan turned to the judge and simply said, the Commonwealth rests. No fireworks, no grandstanding, just a calculated close. That little piece didn't just land because of what she said. It landed because of when and how it was said, confirming a long, intense day of cross-examination. It hit like a pin through the balloon of the courtroom chaos. If you're trying to frame the end of your case as the moment where truth speaks loudest, it doesn't get clearer than that. The defendant asking herself whether she ran someone over and using the word culpability in the same breath. Now, Karen hasn't testified yet. She very likely won't. That decision, according to her, is still TBD. Same for Weather Trooper Michael Proctor, the much-discussed and often-criticized lead investigator, will take the stand for the defense. Standing outside the courthouse after the prosecution wrapped, Reed had one word, to describe the case against her. Unjust. Just that, nothing more. No speech today. No tears, just a clean rejection of everything that's been built against her over the past several weeks. The contrast was hard to ignore. Inside the courtroom, the prosecution dropped a weighty first-hand account. Outside the courthouse, the defendant waved it all off with a single word. And for what's next, Reed's team is set to begin presenting their side of the story. First up, a witness from a film called Delta V. Specializing, or a firm rather, not a film. Kind of sounds like a film, though, doesn't it? A film. A firm called Delta V, specializing in crash forensic, digital data, and vehicle telemetry. Presumably, he'll offer a counter-analysis to what Dr. Welcher laid out over the past few days. If the prosecution painted the picture of a high-speed reverse into John O'Keefe, Delta V is likely stepping in to say, that's not how we see it. The defense case is expected to last another 1 to 2 weeks. That means the jury is now flipping their mental switch from evaluating to the prosecution's claims to considering an entirely different set of arguments, timelines, and possibly new theories about what really happened the night John O'Keefe died. But the challenge for the defense is now baked into that last moment from the prosecution. Every argument they presented going forward has to compete with a simple, unpolished, and unforced moment of personal doubt from Karen Reed herself. It's hard to paint over your own voice. The words, "what if I clipped him," are not exactly the kind of thing you can spin as someone being railroaded by the system. They're introspective, they're self-incriminating, and they came out long before any expert ever touched the case. So now the prosecution steps back, having built their case with everything from DNA and taillight fragments to tech logs and cell phone pings, and capped it off with the defendant offering the jury a question no one else could ask on her behalf. As the court prepares for the defense to take over, what a jury was left with wasn't a chart or a diagram, just that voice. A voice that sounded unsure, maybe frightened, but undeniably real. That voice may echo long after the PowerPoint slides fade. And for prosecutors, that was the goal. Not to dramatize, not to speculate, just to remind the jury that no matter how complicated this case may be, the defendant herself had once looked in the mirror and asked the question, what if? Now that question is in the jury's hands. And the next day, defense is going to be trying to rewrite the story. If the prosecution ended its case with a mic drop, the defense spent the earlier part of the day fumbling with the cord. Thursday morning in the Karen Reed trial didn't start with fireworks, but it started with friction. Before the jury was even brought into the room, there was already tension. Defense attorney Robert Alessi was pushing hard to expand the scope of what he could ask the prosecution's final expert witness, crash reconstructionist, Dr. Judson Welcher. He wanted to question Welcher about conclusions reached by other people, specifically Trooper Joseph Paul and the medical examiner, Dr. Scortibello. The argument, Alessi claimed, Welcher had relied on their work when forming his own analysis and therefore opened the door to questions about their findings. The prosecution, though, pushed back, saying Welcher hadn't adopted those findings, but instead formed his own independent conclusions. The judge wasn't having it for the defense. She sided with the Commonwealth, ruling that Welcher's testimony would have to stand on its own. Alessi was blocked from turning Welcher into a surrogate across for other witnesses. That legal boundary set the tone for what followed. And what followed was a cross-examination that did not go well for the defense. Once the jury was seated, Alessi resumed his questioning of Welcher, but his tone noticeably changed. Where day one of cross-examination might have seemed probing, day two was clearly combative. Alessi frequently interrupted, challenged Welcher mid-answer, and even drew repeated rebukes from Judge Cannone for not letting the witness finish. At one point, when Welcher raised his hand to clarify something, Alessi snapped. You're going to see this in just 1 second. Sir, please don't interrupt. The judge intervened again. You could feel the courtroom tightening. It's like watching someone arguing too loud in a library with a megaphone, on top of tables, standing on books, and throwing firecrackers at people. That kind of a tension. It wasn't just ineffective. It was uncomfortable. It was very weird and very uncomfortable. And here's exactly what it looked like.
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
You had 3D images, correct?
I did.
You could have shown and measured 3D images to get almost the exact contact point and almost the exact dimensions if you had just used the 3D images that you had available to you. Isn't that correct?
That's exactly what we did. When I went through the video analysis, I showed you how we overlaid the point clouds, the 3D scans, on top of each vehicle. So we took the, I'm sorry, let me, we took
Sir,
the vehicles.
Please don't interrupt.
Hold on.
Your Honor, he keeps referencing my hand and saying I'm doing something when I'm not, and I think that's distracting to the jury. So I'm not interrupting
hold
him.
Hold on. Let the witness answer the question.
I am. I'm just holding my hand like this, Your Honor. He keeps saying that I'm doing something.
Mr. Alessi, please.
All right.
Go ahead. Finish the answer, Dr. Lund.
Again, in the photogrammetric analysis, I showed the video. I showed how we overlaid the point cloud on top of the video. That proves that the way we solved it, correct camera characteristics, matches. Otherwise, that would be distorted. We overlaid the scans of the Lexus into the photogrammetric analysis. We overlaid the scans of the scene into the photogrammetric analysis. We overlaid all that stuff into the analysis. We did exactly what you're suggesting.
That's why it's not a great idea to start going after an expert witness in an area you are not remotely familiar with. I mean, I get it. You got to try and poke holes somewhere, but so many of the questions that he was asking him didn't make sense. And they didn't make sense to a lot of people who aren't even engineers. It was a spectacle. It was a spectacle. Despite the pressure, Welcher did hold firm. He didn't fold, didn't fluster, and more importantly, he didn't give the defense what it wanted. A moment of doubt, a contradiction, anything that might rattle the scaffolding the prosecution had spent weeks building. Alessi came armed with angles. He tried to poke holes in the reverse throttle data. And the fact that Reed's Lexus had recorded a sudden acceleration in reverse, hitting 74% throttle and reaching nearly 24 miles per hour just after 12:30 a.m. on the night John O'Keefe was allegedly struck. Welcher had explained that the data on direct testifying that it strongly supported the prosecution's theory that Reed reversed into O'Keefe with significant force. Alessi tried to undercut that by comparing it to what he called trigger events that had shown up on the vehicle's tech stream data before that night. 18 of them, to be exact, that had never been considered collisions. If those didn't register as accidents, Alessi argued, how could this one be taken as definitive proof? Welcher calmly explained that the system doesn't register collisions based on impact alone. It flags events based on sudden changes in vehicle behavior, things like harsh braking, steering, or rapid accelerations. The January 29th event had all three. The earlier 18 did not. The defense then shifted to the now famous Ring camera footage, the surveillance footage from O'Keefe's own home, which captured Reed's SUV nudging his parked Chevy Traverse later that morning around 5:07 a.m. The defense claims that this is when the taillight broke, not earlier in the night during an alleged collision with O'Keefe. Welcher testified that such a minor bump wouldn't have caused the level of damage seen to the taillight, based on testing and reconstruction, you know, science. But Alessi focused on something else, the camera. Specifically the fact that the original camera from January 2022 had since been replaced with a newer Ring camera. Alessi tried to use that as a wedge, suggesting that Welcher's analysis of angles and distances could be off because the camera used for the simulation wasn't the exact same one from the night in question. Welcher acknowledged that the hardware difference was there, but said it didn't affect his analysis. He used available data and visual references to reconstruct the scene, and any distortion differences from camera models had been accounted for. He reminded the court that in his simulation, the Lexus's taillight came within about an inch of the Traverse, but didn't make contact, reinforcing his point that if that bump had shattered the light, there would have been far more visible movement or debris captured. Alessi pushed back, asking why the still image didn't clearly show space between the vehicles. Welcher's answer? Two-dimensional images compress depth. That's why he was providing multiple angles. The physical math didn't lie, even if the snapshot itself lacked depth cues. Not done yet, though. Alessi moved to the subject of the glass fragments, another key piece of forensic evidence. Investigators had recovered glass from the taillight area of Reed's Lexus, and some of those shards, prosecutors argued, came from the glass O'Keefe was allegedly holding when struck. But during cross, Alessi zeroed in on something technical. Welcher never personally examined the glass. And that's true, he didn't. He reviewed reports, photos, and data, but he didn't get hands-on with the fragments. Alessi used that to suggest Welcher's conclusions about the crash and the glass were speculative. Welcher pushed back, saying the trajectory of the glass and how it was embedded matched the expected physics of a collision, not a minor tap in a driveway hours later. And came the accusation of bias, because why not? Alessi leaned hard into the idea that Welcher was a hired gun. He brought up that Aperture LLC, Welcher's firm, was paid $44,000 in late 2024, followed by an additional $325,000 this year to assist in the prosecution. That kind of money, the defense implied, buys loyalty. Really? Because this is pretty normal stuff. And he damn well knows that, and he damn well hopes the jury has no idea how much expert witnesses get paid. And like I said, it's a good business to be in if you are an expert in something. I am not, and nobody's going to call an expert podcaster over. So if you got something, might be a career path. Because, yeah, if you didn't know how much expert witnesses get paid, this is not insane. The first time I heard about it, too, I was kind of shocked. I mean, I knew that they got paid something for their time, but I was kind of shocked just how much some get paid. And sometimes they don't even have to do a ton of research. It's just getting their voice into it. I know. Anyway, it's not an oddity in this case. Welcher didn't blink. He testified that he was initially hired to evaluate the possibility that Reed hadn't struck O'Keefe. He said his first working hypothesis was that there had been no collision, but as he worked through the evidence, taillight fragments found near the body, DNA on the rear of Reed's car, the throttle data, he ruled that hypothesis out. The data led him to a different conclusion. Then, in a moment that felt like a turning point, Alessi tried to imply that the entire foundation of the forensic, of the prosecution's forensic case was circumstantial. He framed it like a trap, asking whether all of his conclusions were just based on circumstantial information. Welcher did not dodge. He fired back with a rhetorical gut punch. Are you calling pieces of taillight found around the body circumstantial? I don't know why he suddenly, Inspector Gadget or something, Sherlock Holmes. It landed hard. He reminded everyone that the physical evidence, the fragments, the DNA, the injury patterns all told the same story. This wasn't speculation. It was material reality. After the grueling morning, Alessi wrapped up. The cross was over. Yeah, it has more than one meeting right there. Then prosecutor Hank Brennan stepped up for a brief redirect, not long but strategic. He confirmed that Welcher stood by his analysis, that he didn't rely on any encrypted message apps to communicate about the case. A sub-dig at the defense communication with their experts, and that he had full confidence in the data, the scans, and the 3D reconstruction. Welcher reiterated that he didn't include any theory in his report unless the evidence supported it. If something didn't fit, it got tossed. With all of the questioning complete, Judge Cannone finally dismissed Welcher from the stand. His parting words, "Oh my God, thank you." And it was. I'm not making that up. And it got a few laughs, a lot of people. 3 days of full testimony, a room full of legal sharks, and relentless scrutiny would drain anyone. But what Welcher left behind wasn't fatigue. It was a body of testimony that held. The defense had its shot to unravel him, to catch him slipping, to inject doubt in the technical backbone of the case. They didn't get it. What they got was a witness who stayed consistent, stayed calm, and stayed credible. Whether the jury agrees with his conclusions or not, one thing became clear: the state's expert didn't crack. And with him now gone, the courtroom shifted into a new phase. It was time for the defense to start building something of their own. And that's what's going to be happening next. The defense's case in chief will be beginning, and of course we'll do our update on that over the weekend. And it's going to be interesting to see all that. Very interesting. Your thoughts on how this all ended, how the prosecution's case in chief wrapped up. Not just today, but the whole thing. Maybe we'll do a video on that too. I'm curious. Tell me in the comments section. And if you're listening to us on whatever podcast platform, check us out on YouTube. You can comment on everything there, or you can also join me on social media pretty much anywhere, or Twitter, X, at Tony B Pod. Every place else, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski, and you can listen to us, watch us pretty much anywhere. So, all right. Can't wait to see those comments. It was a dramatic day. My name's Tony Brewski. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NoCD comes in. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NoCD.com.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that? Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious. New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Rakuten is the smartest way to save money when you shop, because members get cash back at over 3,500 stores across every category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, travel, dining, and more. Your favorite stores like Lenovo and Wine.com pay Rakuten a commission for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the commission with its members, and that could be you. Cashback is deposited directly into your PayPal account, or if you prefer, Rakuten can send you a check. The choice is yours. You can even maximize your savings by stacking cashback on top of other deals, like store sales and coupons. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while you're doing it? Membership is free and it's easy to sign up. Get the Rakuten app now and join the 17 million members who are already saving. Cashback rates change daily. See Rakuten.com for details. That's Rakuten. Your cashback really adds up.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. June is Men's Mental Health Month, and every year, 6 million men suffer from depression. If you're feeling overwhelmed, the strongest thing you can do is ask for help. And BetterHelp makes it easy. Take a short online quiz and connect from home with a qualified therapist. Visit BetterHelp.com to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.